For the rest of the hour, what does the incoming president, and in that case, let's throw in the incoming Congress, because all of Congress, lots of senators, are up for re-election. What do they need to think about when it comes to science and technology? And how can we make sure that the president has good people to help him think about that? While the economy and the war are certainly at the front of many people's minds this election season, issues like energy policy, health care, stem cell research sit at the intersection of science and policy. And joining me now to help us consider some of those issues is Tom Murray. He's the president and CEO of the Hastings Center. That's a nonpartisan bioethics research institution in Garrison, New York. Welcome back to the program.
Hello, Ira. It's good to be speaking to you after so long.
Been a while. Before we begin talking about what the president needs, it's hard to ignore the 800-pound gorilla in the room.
Indeed.
And that is the economy and where it's headed. And I know you're not an economist specializing in this kind of question, but we must take into account, don't we, the fact that there may not be money for lots of these things.
I've been thinking about that continuously. So I think what got you to call me in the first place was this report from the Center for the Study of the Presidency, mm-hmm. the panel in which I sat. It was run by Ann Solomon and Richard Meserve, president of the Carnegie Institution. And you can roughly think about the report's recommendations in two classes, policy for science and science for policy. So thinking in the first now, policy for science, how are we going to pay for the kinds of research that we think is important? How are we going to pay for the publicly funded research through agencies like the National Institutes of Health mm-hmm. that will sort of be the font of innovation for biomedicine and healthcare? It's really a terrible quandary right now.
Mm-hmm. 1-800-989-8255, talking with Tom Murray. Okay, let's get into some of these questions about science and policy of science.
Mm-hmm.
What do you see are some of the great issues that we'll be facing the next administration, the next Congress?
Well, if we want to pivot to the issues that we deal with at the Hastings Center, basically bioethics, ethics, mm-hmm. Science, and medicine, there's a long list, but let's mention a few things. But let me begin by asking why bioethics is important in the first place. My friend Nancy Gibbs from Time Magazine was visiting at the center some time ago, and her question was, why should anybody be interested in bioethics? I said, well, you should only be interested in it if you care about what happens at the beginning of life, at the end of life, and at many, many points along the way. So if you follow me that far, then you realize that bioethics issues are particularly difficult ones politically, because they all of them vary along two dimensions. They vary along the sort of the standard political dimension of interest. There are conflicting interests. Physicians, pharmaceutical companies, and families all have interest in the shape of healthcare reform, because it will affect how much money they make, how much money they have to spend. Parents of children with juvenile diabetes care a great deal about what happens in stem cell research policy. The people who run infertility clinics, which tend to be pretty good profit centers, are very concerned about trying to fend off regulation of assisted reproductive technologies. Folks who are worried about organ shortages, some of them will advocate for markets for organs. Well, of course, market solutions may be a little less popular today than they were a few months ago. And there are areas like synthetic biology, which is an emerging technology that we've recently begun working with, studying at the Hastings Center. So the scientists there are saying, self-regulation is fine. We don't need any help. So that the interest dimension is a pretty common one. But we have a second dimension when you begin talking about bioethics, and that's the dimension of meanings and values. The shape of our healthcare system is really also a judgment about what kind of people we are and what we owe one another.
Mm-hmm.
Stem cell policy, particularly, specifically when you're talking about the creation or use of embryos to make stem cells, means a great deal to many people, the fate of those embryos. Same about infertility clinics. The fact that they're We don't know the exact number of frozen embryos in the U.S. right now, but as of 5 years ago, we were able to track almost 400,000. Mm-hmm. The numbers are almost certainly much larger than that right now.
Let me just jump in and say, yep. this is Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News. Talking. Go ahead, Tom.
Well, that's good. I didn't mean for this to be a monologue.
I'll jump in there when it's necessary.
All right. I'll just mention the last two again, the idea of trying to increase the supply of organs by providing financial incentives for families to donate organs or by providing markets for living organ donors, like kidney donors. By the way, I trapped myself there. If you sell something, you're not a donor, you're a vendor.
You're a vendor.
Right.
Interesting. Are these issues going to be framed politically and, I guess, socially by whomever becomes president, having a different view from the other person?
Very much so. And the two candidates on many of these have quite different positions. We did a quick track. If anybody wants to go to the Hastings Center's website, and there's a link to it from your website, we were able to find more than 40 bills on bioethics issues in the current Congress. Now, those that haven't been passed will just have to get back in the queue in the next Congress, so this will all restart again in January. Mm-hmm. We found 7 on just cloning and stem cell research alone.
So this election, even though everybody is focused on the economy at this point, will very much have other coattails to it.
Assuredly, yeah. The one that's received public attention in bioethics has been, of course, healthcare reform.
Yeah, yeah, and of course, a lot of people have talked about embryonic stem cell research, as you mentioned.
That hasn't made the debates, at least not as far as
very little science has made the debates.
Yeah, like,
have you noticed that?
I have, and I've been sorry to see that.
And ethics issues are just about, you know, ethics and science just doesn't about exist in any of the debates that have been going on lately. 1-800-989-8255. Let's see if we can get a call in or two to folks who are eager to talk to us about it. Let's go to Eric in Auburn, New York. Hi, Eric.
Hi. I had a comment about how we can use this economic difficulty to motivate Congress to do things that we might like to see done. I think it would be very difficult to move Congress to do a jobs program and switch us from fossil to a renewable energy economy, but this would start all kinds of industry and be jobs production and get the economy going. We've got infrastructure that needs to be replaced. We should have high-speed internet right to our homes. We should be funding some of the new industry in biotech and other research-related, science-related issues, and I think the listeners here can do a lot simply by calling their congresspeople and encouraging this. It's certainly what I did when they were talking about a bailout.
That's probably been the most important comment about science policy that at least I heard from the various campaigns, and that's been Senator Obama's proposal to sort of rebuild an American industrial economy on green technologies.
Mm-hmm. All right, we have to take a short break and come back and talk lots more with Tom Murray and take your questions. Our number is 1-800-989-8255, talking about the science, public policy, and issues like that in the next administration. We still have science, openness, and freedom issues to talk about. Other kinds of issues that you'd like to talk about, as I say, 1-800-989-8255. If you're in Second Life, find us in Science Friday Island. We'll be right back after this break. I'm Ira Flatow. This is Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News. You're listening to Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. We're talking this hour with Tom Murray, President and CEO of the Hastings Center. That's a bioethics research institution in Garrison, New York. Our number 1-800-989-8255. Tom, let's talk a bit about some of the other big issues facing the presidency, and one that really, I think, has a bioethics edge to it that doesn't get talked very much about is some of these emerging technologies like nanotechnology.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the jury is still out on the total health effects, the possible health effects of all these tiny nanoparticles that are floating around.
Indeed. I have a bicycle with me here on Cape Cod right now. It's made with carbon fiber, and I love the bike, but we'd like to know a lot more about the potential health effects of carbon fiber when it's being manufactured and when it degrades and enters the waste stream.
And when you saw into it to customize your bike.
Yeah.
And you create that dust.
Yeah, I'm sure. We've been looking at nanotechnology at the center. More recently, as I mentioned, we've been looking at synthetic biology. Mm-hmm. Have you spoken about that on Science Friday
sure,
at all?
But go
yeah.
ahead.
Yeah, well, synthetic biology is very interesting because it invokes all these questions about benefits, which are somewhat easier to imagine, but risks, which can be very difficult to really get your arms around.
Such as?
You don't really know how these complex new biological organisms are going to behave. Biological systems are inherently complex and unpredictable, and you don't know what will happen if any of them are released into the general environment. Mm-hmm. Now, the people who are developing them have pretty good, reasonable answers right now. They'll say, well, we'll make them so they're so fragile that they'll be essentially hothouse flowers and they wouldn't survive outside of a laboratory or industrial setting. Mm-hmm. And that's possible, but life does tend to find a way. So we'd want to look at that, look at those problems. But the other thing about synthetic biology that's less talked about, and it's the set of issues that we're particularly interested in, is its meaning for our relationship both with ourselves, if we began to use synthetic biology to remake our bodies and our physiology, and our relationship with nature. These are very tough things to try to articulate, and they're extremely difficult for policymakers to understand how to think about and how to bring into their judgments when they're shaping policy. But we think these are issues that absolutely need to be addressed, and we're hoping to do that soon.
And where do they get their advice on thinking about these things?
That's a good question. That's an empirical question. I don't know the whole answer to, Ira, to be perfectly honest.
The fact that no one knows it answers the question itself.
I'll tell you a couple of quick stories. Years ago, this must have been about 7 years ago, when the new Congress, so it would have been, but it had actually been 2001, I think, when the new Congress was getting together, and the people were still civil enough to one another, that they were able to hold a bipartisan congressional retreat. And I was invited to be one of the experts. They didn't have a lot of them. Maybe had a dozen people from outside of the Congress people, their families, and their senior staff. And I was running a couple of workshops on basically genetics and genetic engineering, biotechnology, and the like, and ethical issues thereof. And after one of the workshops, one of our elected representatives came up to me and said, can you explain to me what the difference is between a genetically engineered organism and the stuff, the hybrid and hybrids? Mm-hmm. And I was able to, but it was a good thing that he was able to ask that question. But the fact that he's on a committee that has jurisdiction over this and nobody had ever explained that to him was a little frightening. The setting, because it was private, no reporters there, enabled him to ask an embarrassing question that he otherwise might have, just never asked. We need more settings like that. We need more opportunities for policymakers to get valid information and not look like fools while they're doing it.
1-800-989-8255. Mark in St. Paul. Hi, Mark.
Well, to the answer of advisory, you can also go back to the 1980s. I remember while I was in the service, I remember hearing and reading about where Reagan dissolved or disbanded a science advisory council to Congress, saying that Congress can get the proper information from lobbyists. So there was something that was out there. It was nonpartisan, everything, but Reagan said we cannot rely on the lobbyists.
What, you don't think that they can get adequate information from lobbyists? Is that your, is that what you're saying?
Well, considering lobbyists work for industries that want Congress to vote certain ways, probably not.
I'm with you 100%. I should note that in the Center for the Study of the Presidency report, the second recommendation includes a recommendation to create a Congressional Office of Science and Technology Policy. I suspect the body you're talking about was the old Office of Technology Assessment.
Yeah, that's what it was.
There is one thing, a little comment one person is making about complexity of biology. Something most people don't realize, we understand the space shuttle far better than we understand the basic complexities of a single-celled organism. The chemistry goes on there way outweighs or is more complex than most of the space shuttle workings.
That's an excellent analogy. Thanks for that.
Thanks, Mark.
Good day.
It underscores the our interest and concerns about synthetic biology.
Yeah, so you can also apply that to we know more about the backside of the moon than we know about the deep oceans.
Yep.
So there's a lot of work to be done, and as you said, as we started out saying, Lord knows where the money is going to come from. There was even talk about even the space program cutting back possible future exploratory missions to Mars and other places because money is tight.
And if you look at the platforms of the parties and the presidential and the policies proposed by the presidential campaigns, there's not much explicit mention of funding for science or science policy in the Republican platform or in Senator McCain's campaign pledges, but Senator Obama does include a significant increase for NIH in his plans. Mm-hmm. Now, what the fate of that will be in the light of the looming economic catastrophe, who knows?
But shouldn't that be an issue of ethics itself? I mean, what to fund? What kinds of programs we should be spending our money on?
Absolutely. It's both an issue of good science policy. I mean, what kind of funding for science, public science, what kind of encouragements for the research and development in the private sector are going to be most beneficial for the American economy and for the American people? What are going to lead to jobs? What are going to lead to economic growth in this country? That's very much a value question. And then where you put it, do you put it in health? Do you put it in so-called translational research? Do you put it in basic research? Those are very difficult questions of judgment and value.
Mm-hmm. During the last the debate, Senator Obama and McCain differed, I think, for the first time I'd ever heard it spoken so succinctly about health care, whether it should be a right or it should be an imperative. Should it be something that you have a right to or something that is that is something that a company can decide to give you or not?
Yeah, I think the question was framed, is health care a privilege, a right, or an obligation?
Obligation. Right.
And Senator McCain answered an obligation. Senator Obama answered a right and then told the very touching story of his mother dying of cancer and fighting with insurance companies. Americans have struggled with this for a long time. In the early, around 1983, I think it was, 25 years ago, there was a presidential bioethics commission that started under Carter but finished under Reagan. So by the time the final report, which was on access to health care, was written, the commissioners themselves were overwhelmingly Reagan Republicans. They nonetheless said that all Americans, that America as a society has an obligation to make sure that all Americans have access to needed health care. That was a pretty radical statement for that time. I mean, it slipped unnoticed into the world, and no one's acted on it since. But I think, quite frankly, between that kind of genuine, deep social obligation to provide each other with health care and calling it a right, there's not a great deal of difference.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And there was a bill. We're going to talk about this in another program. But there was a bill that was passed last week amid the bailout bill that requires doctors and the healthcare system to treat mental illness on a par with physical illness.
Yes.
And I thought that was, they said it took 12 years to get that, but it seems like an incredible ethical issue here.
Well, people who struggle with mental illness or have people they love in their family who are struggling with mental illness have been fighting this for a very long time. And there's still a bit of a suspicion and stigma associated with mental illness, and this helps to lift it, and it helps to assure that people get with mental illness get access to treatment. That's all for the good. More and more clinicians and families and patients understand mental illness as a brain disease. It's not just behaving badly, but it's really a disease.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to the phones. Charles in Beaufort, North Carolina.
Hello.
Hi.
Afternoon to y'all.
Good afternoon.
Afternoon.
All right. I'd like to follow up on a statement you made earlier about the Reagan administration saying that Congress could get their pertinent science information from lobbyists. And my question is, why can't, hard to put it, maybe nonprofit or positive science corporations lobby the government also? And I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you.
Okay.
It was the caller who said that Reagan, when he dissolved OTA, said that science could rely on lobbyists. I don't remember that, but he dissolved OTA. I don't remember the lobbyist line, but it was a great line. I'm not quite sure what Charles was proposing. I can tell you that there is increasing activity among nonprofits, at least, to try to provide more valid and balanced information to Congress. The Hastings Center is stepping into this arena. We now have something called a bioethics briefing book with analyses of 36 issues that we think are of interest and to policymakers and are likely to be the concern for either legislation or regulation in the next Congress.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. How far down do you think these issues will be for the next president? I think he's going to have a lot to tackle. Do you think that the next president will at least get a presidential advisor on tap pretty quickly?
Well, hope so. That, the first recommendation from the study group at the Center for the Study of the Presidency was that there should be an assistant to the president for science and technology, and that appointment and the head of the other agency, senior science agency, should be among the very first appointments made. I mean, they should already know who they want for those offices, quite frankly.
Mm-hmm.
And they should already begin, they should very quickly begin vetting them.
Mm-hmm. This is Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News. I'm Ira Flatow talking with Tom Murray, President and CEO of the Hastings Center. What's on the top of the Hastings Center list now? What are you most important, do you think?
Well, we're looking at guidelines at the end of life. This is health policy. I mean, do we provide adequate support for things like hospice care? Do we have good policy for palliative care? Palliative care isn't just an end-of-life issue, although it is very important at end-of-life. But we've got a fight right now going on between the Office of Drug Policy and doctors who want to be able to use effective and powerful pain control drugs for patients who are suffering. So that's an issue that's up for us. And as I mentioned, synthetic biology we're working on. I work a lot on an issue that I don't think is going to be very high on the president's agenda, and that is the ethics of enhancement technologies. Everything from drugs and sports to gene doping to college students or scientists and engineers taking drugs that they think are cognitive enhancers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but that's everywhere.
It's
all around us.
It does. I mean, I did have a cup of coffee before I began talking to you, I admit that. And caffeine is a pretty nonspecific and pretty benign drug, but it does affect the brain.
And you know, this being baseball playoff season and World Series, it might be a good time to raise those whole drug-enhancing issues.
When is a bad time to raise it? I mean, we just lived through an Olympics where very few people were caught with drugs, but now they're going back and reanalyzing some of their samples for some of the drugs that they didn't test for initially. We had three cyclists recently eliminated from competition in Europe because of the use of a recent generation blood boosting drug. So yeah, it's pretty interesting.
Yeah.
Sport isn't a metaphor for everything else in life, but it's it is interesting.
All right, Tom Murray, thank you very much for taking time to be with us.
It's a pleasure, Ira.
You're welcome. Tom Murray, President and CEO of the Hastings Center. It's a nonpartisan bioethics research institute in Garrison, New York.